Welcome to Bike Tourist Podcast, show number 5. My name is Gabriel, and I bid welcome to the show, especially if you are new to this podcast. Today we are going to have a really cool interview with brothers John and Mike Longston and Nate Aiello, who recently finished their 16,000-mile spinning southward tour from Alaska to Argentina for the National Brain Tumor Foundation. We will share their experiences on this long trip, and you can follow their video documentary on their website www.spinningsouthward.com. In order to do this interview, we had to go international. As Mike is right now in Bolivia, South America, John is in New York, and Nate is in California, while this podcaster is in beautiful Puerto Rico. So if you hear some audio nuances, consider them, like they said in Woodstock, scars in fine leather. So now let's get on to it. Hello, guys.
Hey, Gabriel.
How's it going?
Fine, I'm fine. Okay, right now we are here doing this interview for the Bike Tourist Podcast. We have here, like I said before, John and Mike Longston and Nate Aiello. Okay, every one of you, starting with John and then Mike and then Nate, yeah. Present yourselves and talk to the audience here for the podcast.
Excellent. All right. Well, I'm John Longston, and I'm representing New York City. Big ups for Brooklyn. We're really pleased to be here and share some of our stories from the road. So, yeah, let the games begin.
Yeah, I'm Mike Logsdon. I'm John's brother. I'm down here in Bolivia representing La Paz, where it's always interesting. And yeah, I've been looking forward to this interview. I'm excited.
Yeah, and I am Nate Aiello, representing the beautiful West Coast down here in sunny Southern California. And yeah, I'm ready to talk about the trials and tribulations of our wonderful journey.
Okay, guys. Okay, your trip has been really great. You know, 16,000 miles from Alaska to Argentina. Okay, whose idea in the first place was this? I'm asking John right now.
Yeah, well, I you know, Gabriel, I wish I could take credit for it, because it is truly an amazing adventure. But this was actually the concept was come up. My brother came up with it several years back. He just kind of mentioned, it would be kind of cool to do a long range bike trip. I'd cycled across the U.S. and Mike had done some cycling around Ireland. And I think we just really enjoyed that kind of mode of travel. And so we were looking to take it to the extreme. And this, through a conversation we carried out when I was in New York and Mike was in Atlanta, kind of came to the consensus that this would be, you know, about as wild an adventure as you could come by. So that's how it started.
I think also that you can actually claim credit indirectly, because I came up with this idea based on the fact that John had done across the U.S. for Habitat for Humanity, that sparked a bit of jealousy, and so I looked into doing this trip, I checked it out, and then through some of my own solo rides, I realized, you know what, I needed a partner, and that's when I gave John a call.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, Nate. I heard that you just jumped in into this adventure when you heard about what the brothers were going to do. How was it?
Well, it was pretty crazy. I was working down here in L.A. and I'd heard through a relative who grew up with Mike and John that they were doing this trip. I checked out the website, and it kind of coincided with a dream of mine of doing a bike tour documentary that I had wanted to do for a long time, since I did a bike tour with my cousin through California. And we also have the factor in common that both of our mothers had passed away from a brain tumor, and that was why they were doing the tour. So I was like, I had all these things that were kind of coming together at the same time, and then I talked with them, and then they got me all excited and riled up about it. So basically I kind of just forsook everything in my life and just went 3 weeks after I met him.
Yeah, and I've got to, you know, I think Mike and I both have to give a shout out to Nate for what he did, because, you know, when you step back and look at it, we had 3 years to plan for this trip. Nate took about 2 weeks and, you know, quit his job, basically left his apartment, all of his stuff, and just jumped on a bike. I mean, it's really a brave kind of thing to do, and I think we really appreciated that, you know, that we could have some kind of video document of this trip to remember it by and to bring some more attention to it. So thank you again, Nate, for that.
Yeah, and I think also that, I mean, that kind of goes in line, you know, I mean, from the get-go, it seemed like Nate, you know, obviously we had our fingers crossed, we didn't really know Nate at all, but, you know, his ability to say, hey, you know, he got a hold of us, called us on the phone, said, I'm interested in talking to you guys about what you're doing. And then, you know, within the matter of an evening, we went out and had a few drinks and talked over things. And he said, I'm into this. Would you guys, you know, be interested in having me as part of the trip? And you know, that kind of spontaneousness, you know, was something that definitely caught both of our attention. And it was something. It's part of the nature of bike touring. You know, you don't necessarily know what's coming next. And he was willing to just jump in and go for it, and so that was something that drew me especially to bringing Nate in on the trip.
Okay, John, how did you guys get involved in the National Brain Tumor Foundation? So talk to us about that, because I see right here in your page that all that you have done is closely related to this. To the foundation and to the experience you three have had in your life with brain tumors. Yeah. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, well, you know, the concept for this trip, I mean, if I can step back for a moment, the concept for this trip, you know, this kind of adventure, you know, trying to gain some new experience in parts of the world that we hadn't been and get that kind of cultural experience and education, was really fostered by our mother, who this was a woman who was, you know, born in Australia, raised in Morocco, traveled throughout her life, and from the very beginning made it clear to both Mike and I that travel was or should be, you know, if you had the means, an essential part of life. Because it was an education and a wonderful way to experience the world and life. So, you know, unfortunately, she passed when we were in high school from a brain tumor. But we carried on that spirit that she'd instilled in us of kind of adventure and experience around the world and seeing what was out there. And it was only at, you know, once we'd come up with the idea that then one of Mike's friends actually came to us, approached us and said, you know what, there's a wonderful organization based out of San Francisco that does great work giving people information about the various care treatments that are out there all over the nation and all over the world and do a lot to support research through funding and lobbying. So we were a little bit tentative at first, just because this all came to us fairly late in the process. But, you know, we went to a meeting with them, and right off the bat, it was clear that we had, you know, the foundation for a great working relationship. And so we went from there. They basically said, you know what, look, we're here to support you in any way that we can. You know, we don't have that much time to work with, but let's make this work and put something, a powerful thing together that's really going to, you know, would make your mother proud, is going to represent her well, and, you know, and through that process, that's, you know, to date we've reached, I can't say how many people, but through our media outreach effort and just grassroots
about
talking to
people. Eight to 10 million people,
yeah. Right.
We believe.
And I mean, that's great, you know. And the other thing is, of course, we raised, reached our goal, which was $50,000, which is going to go directly towards cancer research, brain tumor research. I'm sorry.
Mike, we'd hope to have a margarita slush fund, but it just didn't work out. No.
There's only so many funds you can ask for, you know.
Indeed.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's a wonderful pairing, I think, and, you know, it continues to this day.
Okay, Mike, do you want to add something to that?
Well, it was just an incredible opportunity. I mean, we had this this desire to do this incredible adventure, and what better way to honor our mother, you know, through something that she thought was so important, travel, experiential learning. And to pair it off with the National Brain Tumor Foundation in memory of our mother, I mean, it was almost too good to be true. It was just the logistics. You know, had we been planning the trip, it was all very quick, and you know, we hadn't this was all new to us. So it was with great luck that my friend Jonathan Cooper stepped in and connected us up with the National Brain Tumor Foundation. So we really appreciate his work.
Didn't all come together like 2 weeks before you guys actually were planning to leave?
A little bit
further out than that, but still it was in, you know, crunch time for us. So yeah.
But I mean, it just came down to it was an opportunity that couldn't be passed. I mean, you know, we had an opportunity to do something great for a charity that meant so much to us, you know, losing our mother, and having a chance to give back to that, and to potentially make a difference, raise awareness, raise funds for research. It was something that just couldn't pass up.
Okay, I'm going to ask Nate, because I know that his mother also passed away. I understand that his mother's name was Fran. And can you talk to us how you felt motivated when these guys were doing this tour, the motivation for the tour, and you had the same experience?
Yeah, it's funny, because maybe 1 month, 2 months before I ever met Mike and John, I had been talking with a good friend of mine, and I'd been talking about, you know, I wish there was some way that I could honor my mother, I could honor the death of my mother, and kind of look back on it and have a good way to remember her name, you know, for the future, and for everyone, you know, everyone who knew her as well. And this spinning southward just kind of came out of nowhere, and it was just another piece that fit so perfectly into place that it was just incredible to have that outlet for it, to have that opportunity.
Yeah, that is incredible. It's incredible, because when I first read 16,000 miles, I just saw the number 16,000. Then 16,000? No, 16,000.
And then, yeah, when you give it in kilometers, it's even more.
Yeah. Said, we have something here. We have something here. Okay, let's move on into the tour itself. You plan the route, the route from Alaska to Argentina. Just naming the places where you went, you know, from Alaska, you know, I get the shivers, you know, it's that long distance.
We did too, especially before we started.
Yeah. Okay. How was your preparation for this tour? And I heard that you had like 2 years or 3 years. If I'm mistaken, how much?
Yeah. No, that's correct. We started talking about it probably 3 years prior, and it didn't really come together in terms of the actual planning for the trip until, you know, maybe 8 months out, 9 months out. So, but Mike, if you want to take this one.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredibly difficult because, we had no, John had experience through Habitat, but, You know, I mean, and he could speak about that if he chooses. But you know, I had no real concept of the amount we needed to prep. I mean, you know, there was, you know, so many logistical hurdles. One being, we actually didn't even own bicycles prior to the trip because, unfortunately, through a number of things, one bike I think broke and another bike was stolen. So we were kind of you know, scrounging to put everything together. You know, get our bikes, get our equipment, organize the gear, get the plane tickets. Can we make it to Prudhoe Bay? What's the weather going to be like? You know, well, are we going to run into bears? You know, I mean, there were so many questions out there, and it kind of built to a point where it seemed a bit overwhelming until John finally said, you know, look, let's just buy the tickets. Let's just buy the tickets to Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, and then we'll know we're going, and we'll get done what we get done, and that'll be that. And I think really made the difference.
I think Mike's right. You know, that kind of brought it, you know, made it real. And it also, you know, you pay that money for the tickets, you're going to go, you know, it makes you kind of work and lights a fire under your butt. I mean, but also what we learned through this process of planning for this trip is that there are a lot of resources out there on the web from other people's websites about bike touring and various biking organizations and associations that, you know, can really provide you with a lot of information if this is something you want to do, you know. So we drew a lot on the information we gained from people who'd done this very trip, so that was very beneficial to us.
And we're hoping to put together something relatively soon, you know, kind of a, you know, maybe a small how-to packet to kind of help people, you know, who are interested in pursuing a bike tour, you know, of 16,000 miles or, you know, 160 miles or even less, you know, it doesn't matter. But, you know, just, you know, we learned, you know, it was a kind of a trial by fire process, and we learned a lot, and we're hoping we can share that with more people who are interested in pursuing this activity.
Yeah, so I would certainly encourage people. I mean, right now you can go to our website, spinningsouthward.com, and there are a number of links to other resources. We also have information there on our site that can give people a sense of how they can, you know, if they want to get involved with this or this specific trip, or as Mike said, any kind of bike touring.
Yeah, you know, you guys talking about getting the plane tickets is like a motivator. You know, it just remind me that when I signed up for the Tour of Life, that was like 2 weeks ago. You know, I broke my elbow last January. I still not recovered fully from that, but I just wanted to make a statement that I am back. You know, I have my arm broken, but I can still function. I can still function. You know,
that's not gonna keep me down.
Yeah, so I just went. I just paid the fee. When I told my mother, you know, my father almost forbid me to take to mount into a bike again. You know. He's 80 years old, you know, so I don't want, you know. So I told my mother, hey, I signed up for a tour. I said, are you crazy? You want to break your other arm? No, don't do that. I said, I already paid the fee. I'm not going to lose that money.
There you go.
Exactly.
Okay, I have a question for Nate, you know. Yeah, he was touring with you guys, and but he had his hands full. Okay, Nate, how did you cope with the logistics of doing this documentary? You know, writing and doing this. How did you cope with that?
Well, a lot of beer. Basically the best way to do it. No. You know, it's one of those things. It's like something that you just want that bad. you just gotta take it in stride, you know, when things go wrong. And I don't know, maybe luckily or unluckily for me, a lot of things went wrong. So I had a lot of experience handling things that are going wrong. So as I just kept going, like, I was just like, oh, there's another thing that is going wrong. So, you know, oh well, just keep going with it. Just do the best you can, and just try to cope, you know.
Okay.
I mean, I don't really know else how else to describe it other than just sheer motivation to keep going.
Well, I mean, just to kind of flush out what Nate was saying, I mean, you can imagine what he was going through. His vision was to do 13 episodes from the road editing, so he had not only the camera equipment, but all of his computer equipment on board as well. And you know, to try and give people back at home a sense for what was going on, here's a guy who's going to ride all day, you know, usually maybe 10 hours of riding, which is, you know, a day's work with a trailer on your back of your bike. And then it's like doing that and then going to work, because Nate was, you know, at night editing the documentary. So it was an incredible, ambitious undertaking. I think eventually what turned out was the best, you know, to save him artistically and kind of focused on the filming, was to just say, let's take a step back and finish up the episodes when the trip is done and you got some perspective and time to really do the editing. So it was incredible.
Yeah, well, what helped me make that decision, too, was my computer actually broke. So
I didn't
really have a choice, but it was a good decision maker for me, because it didn't turn out any better.
Right. But what you did have a choice with was the way you dealt with it. You know, I mean, Gabriel, like, I don't know, you may find out through the website, or you may already have. But, you know, his camera broke. His computer broke, you know, he got it fixed, then it would break again, and then it would, you know, and it was just such an incredible, I mean, and, you know, the cost associated with trying to get these things repaired on the fly was also pretty daunting. And, you know, I was getting unbelievably frustrated and depressed, you know, for Nate, because he was handling it so well. You know, he was just like, you know, he would get a little frustrated, and then he'd be like, you know what, forget it, it's, you know, it is what it is, and, you know, I'll do the best I can, and you know, that's all I can do, and we'll just keep on going.
And I think, you know, that's part of the philosophy of the road, or you know, the preferred philosophy is, you know, there has to be some acceptance of what is inevitable, which is, you know, problems with the bikes, and you know, roads might be blocked or these kind of things. I mean, you have to be prepared for the unknown and to accept that on some level. I mean, you can still work to try and overcome these obstacles, but you know, if you're too kind of, you know, over eager and think you can just kind of come into one of these trips and sail through smoothly,
I'm kind of plan everything.
Yeah, you got another thing coming, because it just doesn't work like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mike and John had their fair share of things they had to overcome as well. So, you know, we all got it at some point or another, and it's really just the state of mind that you gotta put yourself in.
It's one of the
best things I learned on the trip, to be honest. Like, it was one of the biggest things that I've learned.
Okay, let's talk about what you took into this tour with you, because, you know, this trip so long, there are some items that you bring with you that helped you along the road. But there are some items that you need to pick up along the road. How did you make the decisions on what to bring, what not to bring, what to get on the street? Okay, I'm directing this question to Mike.
Well, you know, I mean, what we tried to do was, you know, get a good basic rounding of the materials we thought we'd need. You know, make sure that we had, you know, plenty of extra spokes. You know, making sure we had tubes. You know, we had some redundancy. We both, when John and I started out, we both had bike pumps, and when Nate joined, you know, made sure that he was going to have one as well. You know, and we tried to, you know, keep a, you know, a few of everything. You know, whether it was our cooking stoves, our fuel bottles, or basic supplies for the bikes. You know, extra chain and whatnot. But you know, there is some danger in that, because you know, you are cycling and carrying all your gear. And you know, if you do too much of that, you know, you're just going to weigh yourself down. And you'll never get anywhere. So we tried to strike a healthy balance between what we thought we should have at all times, and then having some things that we only had one or two of. And we figured we could pick up along the way.
Yeah, and if I can add to that, I think, you know, part of that with bike touring is, unless you're you know, a regular bike tourer, some of that gets worked out on the road. You know, you start out with a lot of stuff you think you might need, and over the course of, I think, you know, the first couple weeks, it really became clear to us, okay, well, maybe we don't need the hair dryer, or not that we had it. But you get what I'm trying to say. You know, you kind of shake it out over the course of that first week or two, and really find out what you need. And because you're carrying it, you're very conscious of what's really necessary and what's not. You know, and we were camping, so we had, you know, our tent and sleeping bags and stoves and all of that stuff, and some repair gear. You know, kept the clothes to a minimum. And,
bare minimum, some, except for socks. Lots of socks.
Right. Some food and you know, you find out as you go what's regionally, what's available in terms of food and what's going to keep, you know, if you're on the road and in the heat and those kind of things. You want.
And also what in the differences between what, you know, what's available in terms of biking equipment while, you know, and, you know, when you're going through the U.S. and Canada, it's not as difficult if you can find a town of, you know, even limited size to pick up some of that gear. But when you get into Central America and parts of South America, you know, it can be very difficult to find, you know, particular parts, you know, the sizes that you need, or, you know, the part altogether.
Yeah.
Okay. One thing is, when you're riding from Alaska, how was the temperature? You know, it was almost summer, but, you know, there's never summer in the north, you know. So you have to basically have different clothing for different regions. You know, you start in the north, then you go to the States, then you go to South America, so you keep changing clothes and throwing away.
Yeah, well, we were very fortunate to have Mountain Hardware as one of our sponsors on board. So you know, in general, you're looking for clothes that has good wicking capabilities. You know, that's flexible, lightweight. You know, we had pants that you could turn into shorts, you know, light fleece. We had a small down jacket that you could really bunch into a small ball and stow away easily. And a rain jacket, you know, rain gear, rain pants, and a couple pairs of bike shorts. So, you know, you just want the necessities. But it behooves you to be prepared, as you said, for places like Alaska and other places that where the weather is unpredictable. And the last thing you want to do is, you know, after a long, you know, being on the road and it's cold rain and come into camp and not have the gear you need to kind of get yourself back and warmed up.
Well, and also, you know, I mean, it just, you know, it's, you know, the first day one when we start the trip, you know, it feels like it's going to snow, you know, coming out of Prudhoe Bay. And then, you know.
And this is, sorry to interrupt, Mike, but, and this is in, you know, late July. Just to give you a sense for how unpredictable it is up there.
But then, you know, you got the following day, and it's, you know, it's 80 degrees. So, you know, and that goes for the entire trip. I mean, you know, we pretty much went through every type of climate and weather condition, you know, what have you, that you can imagine. You know, from the deserts to the rainforest to the mountains to the valleys. You know, I mean, it was, you know, it was everything. You know, from one extreme to the other. So, you know,
I was just going to say that was part of the beauty and the challenge of this trip, is you really took it in all in terms of geography and climate. That's you get a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Okay. So okay, that was in terms of clothing. What about food? You know, how did you do? Do you have some basic food stuff that you bring with you, and the other you pick up from the road? How did you do that? In the interest of our listeners.
Yeah, well, I'll answer that question. I mean, from starting out in Prudhoe Bay, you're looking at almost 500 miles of road that has virtually, I mean, it's the least serviced road in North America. It's the Dalton Highway, and that presented a lot of challenges. I mean, how much food can we reasonably carry? You know, what were we going to do about water, this and that? So, we had never traveled in that region. So we stocked up on what we thought was going to be good. We got a lot of ramen noodles to provide the carbs. It's lightweight, tastes good. And we got these foil tuna packets that were also lightweight, easy to carry, and wouldn't have us hauling a lot of trash. And we whipped up a lot of that, along with a few other things. Water was the biggest limiting factor, and for dealing with that, we got a really, really good quality pump filter that allowed us to basically, you know, find any pond, stream, river, lake, whatever, and just, you know, plug in and get clean water. You know, with the exception of viruses, that was it cleaned everything. And you know, if you carry some iodine tablets, that'll square that away as well.
And I would just say, you know, you got to be thinking like an athlete, and an athlete, and also intelligent about, you know, weight management, not in terms of your body, but in terms of what you're carrying. So you're looking for high protein, high carb. You can basically eat anything you want, but you're looking for quality food that's high carbs, high protein, some fat. You know, we ate a lot of tuna, avocado, which was really, you know, fortunately very cheap down in Central and South America. You know, and a lot of pasta dishes, you know, curry dishes with rice and chickens and this. And you look to what's regionally available. You have to kind of adjust on the road and find what's there and think, be savvy about, you know, what's going to give you the energy to get back on that bike the next day and ride peanut butter and so forth and so on.
If I could just interject real quick, another lucky thing that, thankfully, we had the support of Clif Bar. It's an energy food company based out of California, and they provided us with a great deal of support in terms of, you know, having energy bars and, you know, energy shots and other, you know, products that would allow us to do the type of work that we wanted to do. And so in addition to the foods we were getting regionally, we always kept a good supply when possible of Cliff's products.
Yeah, and this stuff is easy to carry, you know. It doesn't weigh much, yeah, and it has plenty of power, yeah, packing in just a small bar. And
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, they have what's called builder's bars, and, you know, in a small bar you're getting 20 grams of protein, which is pretty massive. And, you know, if you take bites of that, you know, every, you know, 20, 30 minutes, you know, you've got a substantial amount of energy that you can look forward to. So.
Yeah, I mean, in general, typically what we were doing is, you know, sandwiches for lunch, maybe oatmeal, or I can't even remember what we would do for breakfast, but and then dinner we were having some kind of pasta dish, which incorporated some fats and protein, so beans, you know, tuna, chicken.
A lot of lentils.
Yeah, a lot of, you know, cheese and lentils and that kind of stuff, and get your veggies and fruits as well. You know, you want to keep it balanced, but definitely there's consciousness about the weight factor.
Yeah, I got one thing to say about food, and that is before the trip, I was kind of like, not really a vegetarian, but I didn't really eat, like, I almost never ate pork, very little red meat, you know, some chicken and stuff, but almost every day I wouldn't, I'd only eat meat, like, every other day. As soon as we started riding in Mexico, that whole diet came to an end, because, like, most places in Latin America, in general, everything has meat in it, like, every single thing, like, the beans have meat, the rice has meat, the asparagus has meat, like, everything, so you just... Yeah, if you're not a meat eater, well, you know.
Yeah,
you know.
I can vouch for that. You know.
Yeah. if you're not a meat eater, you're gonna have a real hard time getting through it. I mean, just with the sheer pro, you gotta have a bob bag filled with Cliff Bars if you're gonna be a vegetarian and try to make it through Latin America, because it is tough. And basically, you got one of the main staples was just meat and bread or meat and tortillas.
Well, you tough, know, and, tough but wonderful.
Yeah, it was good though. I mean, I enjoyed
the
it.
Food,
I'm not
the food
lie.
Was. Yeah, the food was unbelievable through Latin America.
Yeah, that's, you know, the other thing is, you can see Gabriel here, we are just talking about food nonstop, because when you're riding, that is what you're thinking about all the time, so
yeah.
Excuse us if we keep talking about it, but the other thing was, we were not solely cooking for ourselves, we were also taking advantage of a lot of the great food that was being made in all these various places. I mean, Mexico, I just bow in reverence to the diversity and kind of delicious, you know, regional treats that we came across wherever we went.
Oh, man, the tortillas were so good, man.
I've never had tortillas like that. And, you know, the seafood, everything. So it was a great great time to, kind of indulge in all that was to be had food-wise.
Yeah, you know, our food is different from the, you know, I think you can vouch for that. You know, you have been to all those countries. Most people who don't understand Latin culture may think that we every you know, you go south of the border, you know, it's everything the same. It's all the same.
Right.
You know, yeah. And yeah.
Not true.
Yeah.
Not true.
It's not true at all. Actually.
Not true. You go 20 miles, it's different. Or 32 kilometers.
Well, and I gotta say, I give credit because it is still, you know, really based. There's a lot of pride in the food, which I really respect. It is great to have.
And what is that?
And looking for some good food. Whoa, we're getting bombarded there.
yeah, what's that?
What's going on?
Sounds like, you know, like some political campaign or something.
It must be Bolivia.
Yeah.
You guys hear me?
What's that?
I'm getting I'm getting hit from all sides with. I'm in a public internet cafe, so it's difficult to maintain a quiet environment.
You can't just tell them that if they could lower it down a couple decibels.
Yeah, but it actually sounds great. gives flavor to the
exactly.
There you go.
Yeah,
yeah. Tell them they're at an Ocho and we need them at about a trace.
Well, I think they were just so excited to be on Gabriel's show that they decided that they'd speak behind me.
I'm here, Mom.
Oh, Gabriel, yeah. I wanted to hear him, but his bandwidth was all gone.
Okay, guys. I think we are going to keep it like this up to here. You know, we want to keep our audience, eager for the next show.
Yes.
Yeah. So in the name of all of you, John, Mike, Nate, and all the people, because it's not just them. You know, there was a bunch of great people working on this. Adventure.
Definitely.
That would be too many to mention without forgetting somebody, and then, you know, getting, hey, you forgot about me, you know, what happened after I did this and that, you know. Yeah. We want to avoid that, you know. So right now we're going to say goodbye to everybody until next week or week and a half, maybe next week, you know. This show is every 2 weeks, but I can do an exception, and, you know, 2 weeks is waiting too long to hear the rest of the adventure with these people. So some closing words for this show, from starting with John.
Yeah, well, you know, the one thing I wanted to mention, well, one, thank you for having us, because it's been great so far, and we're looking forward to the next segment, but I just wanted to mention that if anyone is interested in learning more about the National Brain Tumor Foundation, they can go to braintumor.org, and they have information both in English and in Spanish, you know, about the, as I said, treatment, care options, everything that happens. And our website is, again, spinningsouthward.com. And thank you again.
Yeah, and I would just like to, again, yeah, obviously, thank you, Gabriel, for having us. It's been a wonderful opportunity to share our experiences. And, you know, just to people who are out there who are listening, who are interested in bike touring, who haven't taken on that challenge yet, we really encourage you. Please contact us. You know, we'd love to help you out. It's been one of the best decisions of our lives. I think I speak for all of us. And we just really encourage you guys to get out there, get on your bike. And, yeah, thank you again.
Nate?
Yeah, and this is Nate. I thank you, Gabriel, like everybody else said. And just everybody go to spinningsouthward.com. I got a podcast. A lot of blood, sweat, and tears went into making it, so go check it out. Mostly tears and sweat, not as much blood, but yeah, check it out. You can check it out on iTunes too, and just, yeah, a little bit of blood. There was some. But yeah, check it out on iTunes as well. You can look up Spinning Southward.
Okay, so thank you very much to you for taking the time. You know, it's really difficult for everybody to take the time to get into this. So I'm grateful that you guys the three of you be here with us sharing your experience. And you know, the rest of the audience, sorry, you have to wait. You have to wait if you want to hear more details about the adventure. Go to their website. I'm going to have a link on the website. On Podomatic, on Bike Tourist, I'm going to have a link. So if you cannot catch the information here because of the noise or whatever, you know, this is fine. You can find the link in there. You know, also, we have a. I always mention that we have a phone number at the podcast, you know, backtourist.podomatic.com. The phone number is 206-339-4425, 206-339-4425. And you can leave audio commentaries, but this time I want to make a twist. I want you, if you are interested to making questions to these guys, you know, this is a great adventure. And you might have many questions that we might forget because there's so much we have to talk here. We have to divide it on several shows. That you ask your question. I can make sure they will receive this question and answer this question here in the show in future shows. Remember the number 206-339-4425. Or you can email them and then in the next show I ask them directly the questions. So, goodbye to everybody. Until next week, this is Bike Tourist Podcast. My name is Gabriel, and goodbye.